Hello, and welcome to this Meetings Today podcast. My name is Taylor Smith, Destinations and Features Content Developer for Meetings Today, and I'm excited to be here today with Stephen Cutchins, Senior Product Manager of Accessibility at Cvent. Thank you for joining us today, Stephen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you joined Cvent a year ago as its Senior Product Manager of Accessibility, and at that point, you were new to the hospitality industry. So what have you learned about accessibility in the hospitality industry that you didn't expect or maybe weren't aware of and were surprised to learn was kind of not necessarily a trend, but what was going on in the industry at the time?
It was kind of two things I learned. One of them is, and I will say my experience with the events industry, other than going to conferences, I dated an event planner for a while and I saw how ridiculously busy they are. But other than that, you know, this was new to me. Mm-hmm. The first one is that the people, the hospitality industry, the event planners, they really genuinely want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. They want to help everyone, and that includes their attendees with disabilities. Mm-hmm. Not to talk bad about prior work, but I did a couple of decades of work in the, like, that included the U.S. federal government, and there were certain agencies and certain, you know, organizations where it was a checkbox. Mm-hmm. Are you accessible? Yes or no? Yes. Okay. Whatever. No. We'll try to make it better. We're not like that in this industry. Event planners and hospitality industry in general really want to do the right thing. And I love it. I when you mention accessibility, people's eyes light up like, oh my God, I want to do that. I want to make it where all these people can come to my tent and event and have an equal opportunity to participate, to speak, to learn, to come to a cool party. And the second thing I learned that I kind of knew already, but event planners are insanely busy. Mm-hmm. They want to do the right thing, but it's our job as software, you know, creators of this software companies to make it easy, because their buckets overflowing with work. Mm-hmm. It's crazy how busy planners are. So so we need to help as much as we can.
Yeah, they've got long checklists for the events that they plan. And sometimes without the help of people like you and those softwares, not everything will get checked off the list. And it comes to prioritizing what needs to be prioritized. But what do you do, you know, when everything is a priority, right?
Right.
You need those outlets to be able to help you out with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very true.
So as the world celebrates Global Accessibility Day, May 18th, in your own words, why is it important to be aware of and understand accessibility and its importance, and both from kind of a meetings and events industry perspective, but as well as in our day-to-day lives? Why is this day so important, and why do you feel accessibility is something that people need to be more aware of, especially today?
Yeah, I mean, this is about us. That's why it's important. This is... If it's, I'm not smart enough to say this, but somebody at a conference once said, if we're lucky to live long enough, we'll all have a disability. And mm-hmm. It's true. We get older, our eyes don't work as well, our hands don't work as well, our ears don't work as well, our memory doesn't work as well. All these things that, if we're lucky, it's when we're older, but people have that right now. So mm-hmm. this is us. It's our friends. It's our family. According to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, 26% of adults in the United States, 26% have some form of a disability. So it might be self-care, it might be mobility, it might be hearing or vision or speech. That's a massive number. Mm-hmm. So outside of it making from a business imperative for, you know, event planners, for hospitality industry, because that's 26% of their prospective attendees, mm-hmm. It's us. I mean, we're doing this for ourselves. I'm doing this right now. So when I get older and my eyes go bad and my hands go bad and my ears don't work anymore, I already have that problem anyway, according to my kids, but I have to say what, but I'm doing this for myself, mm-hmm. you know, and my family and my friends and my coworkers. And yeah, it's, you know, this is us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What has Cvent been doing recently to improve its accessibility initiatives and offering, especially in relation to Cvent's central accessibility team? And what is the central accessibility team overall? You know, why did Cvent find it important to have something like this and people focused on that?
So a year ago, it was me. They brought me on. I had to start it. It grew. Now, directly though, I brought one person on, so we grew 100%, but we went from one to two. But more importantly, we realized that I'm not a product owner. I'm not a software engineer. I'm not a tester, a quality engineer. So we have now pockets of, we call them, depending on, we either call them a champion, like somebody on a product is, they're the go-to person for accessibility who knows their product really well, who knows the software engineers, knows the testers, knows where to go to find solutions. But we also have two different groups. One of them is the, it's called QT, Accessibility Task Force. It's the Accessibility Task Force within the quality engineering organization, within the testers. Okay. So, and they kind of stay abreast of best practices and what all the other teams are doing. Another one is called the Accessibility Guild, and that's more the technical side, the software engineers. They do the same thing, but from a software side, to make sure, for example, a focus indicator, somebody's working on a focus indicator that somebody with a disability I mentioned can't use a mouse. They have to use the keyboard. So as they tab through, controls have to show focus. So radio buttons, checkboxes, all those controls show focus. They make sure it's done consistently and done well, and it meets certain guidelines.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's directly grown, but really indirectly exploded. And it's a good thing. It's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was reading a little bit too about the voluntary product accessibility templates or VPATs, which are outlines and kind of give guidelines as to how a certain technology product or service is accessible to people with disabilities. How has CVent ensured its technology performance aligns with accepted accessibility standards and meets these VPAT guidelines?
So the guidelines are actually called WCAG or WCAG, WCAG, Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. They're created by an organization called, everything has an acronym, W3C, Worldwide Web Consortium. They create the WCAG guidelines. The most recent one are 2.1AA. The VPAT, Voluntary Product Accessibility Template, is how you document your conformance to WCAG.
Okay.
So, and technically, I'm going to throw another one. Once you fill the VPAT out, technically it becomes an ACR or Accessibility Conformance Report. This is a test, but nobody asks for an ACR. Clients just ask for VPATs. Okay. So we actually pay to be completely transparent, because I've written VPATs before, like I mentioned, federal agencies. I've written for products before. Mm-hmm. We wanted to be completely transparent, completely open and honest. So we're paying a third party accessibility firm to audit our products. And VPATs are done on a product level. So one for registration, one for Attendee Hub Web, one for Attendee Hub Mobile. We go by product. We pay them to audit our products, record the defects, and write our VPATs. And then we log those defects, and then we start working on them. Okay. And importantly, the defects that they find, the accessibility defects, are treated the exact same as all other defects. They're same as functional. So things like, what do they call the... SLA, service level agreement. So let's say a high defect has to be fixed within 90 days or something like that. Whether it's functional or accessibility, we don't care. We make sure we fix it. And a lot of companies don't do that. They get, and I'm not talking event, I'm talking in kind of prior work, right? But they get a VPAT, they get the defects, they log them, and then they sit on them forever. We just want the VPAT. That's not the case with CVent. We actively work on it. In fact, we've fixed in the last year, I think over 200 accessibility defects. It's a big number.
Yeah.
Our goal is within kind of 1 year, we want to have all the defects that they've identified, all of them fixed.
Mm-hmm. Can you give a few examples of the defects that you're focused on or that you may have seen pop up as a result of these reports?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's control might not work with keyboard, where I mentioned earlier, where somebody who has it impacts a lot of different users, but a user with a physical disability may not be able to use a mouse. So they might use what's called a mouse stick. They literally control their entire web experience with holding a stick in their mouth and one key at a time pressing it. But it also impacts users who are blind. So if somebody uses what's called a screen reader, you may have heard the JAWS screen reader, that's the biggest one. NVDA is another one, another acronym. But they'll use screen readers. They don't use them with the mouse. They use them with the keyboard. So we might have had controls that don't work with keyboard, or color contrast might be insufficient between text and background. And the way they test it, the numbers are high. So if we have, you know, one, I'll say a calendar control, I'm going to make this up, but a calendar control that doesn't work with keyboard, they test it by components. So the footer, the headers, the all that separately. So we might have one defect that's listed 30 times, but still we make sure we fix it and it's in one place, and then it's kind of propagated to all those other places, so it works everywhere.
Awesome. Yeah. How can analyzing and understanding Cvent's technology performance benefit meeting planners and event organizers?
I mean, I think the more work we do, it makes it easier on them because they're, like I mentioned, they're so insanely busy. So we're trying to do things through software that it makes it kind of a no-brainer, I want to say, and they don't have to be accessibility experts. For example, we have two, I'll mention two of them. So you're going through and creating a registration site and you add an image to it. So those screen readers I mentioned read text, read buttons, read, you know, drop down fields. They don't read images. Mm-hmm. You have to have an attribute called alt or alternative text that says, like, and then behind me, there's a picture of a motorcycle on my wall, right? So the alt text would be, a picture of a scooter in Italy or whatever, right? If that's the intent of that. But I would have to add that myself. If mm-hmm. I don't, then the screen reader just says that it's an image, but it doesn't say what it is. Mm-hmm. So we not only have a field for adding alt text, but we make it as mandatory. So when a planner goes through and adds it, it says this is a mandatory field, or they can mark it as decorative, which means a screen reader ignore it. Another one is they're going through and creating a website and they pick, remember those WCAG guidelines I mentioned? Mm-hmm. One of them says color has to be a certain contrast ratio between the text and the background. It's 4.5. Okay. So if they add, let's say they have a pink background and they add an orange text to it, mm-hmm. It would be bad for everybody, but people with low vision or people who might be colorblind, they can't really tell the difference. So if somebody picks that bad color contrast, we actually analyze it, let them know that color contrast is too low. You should pick a darker text or a lighter background. Mm-hmm. They can override it if they want. They can still say, you know, never mind, I want this, but at least we let them know in advance, like, hey, you should not, and this is why you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. And technology is always developing. It's always improving, you know, new inventions and different technologies that we can take advantage of they're constantly evolving. So why is it important for companies and meeting planners and everyone to stay up to date with the latest accessible technology offerings rather than, you know, we got this 10 years ago and it's doing the job, you know, we don't need to update it anytime soon because it still works. But it's important to continue updating it because as you continue updating, more and more opportunities arise, right? So why is it important to make sure that we're aware of everything like that?
Well, the biggest thing is assistive technology. It gets easier and easier for user with disability to interact with the web, to use software. Mm-hmm. So like those screen readers, that JAWS one I mentioned, they come out with a new JAWS release, a big one every year. So we test with the current version. We also test, and we base this on reputable surveys of people with disabilities of what screen readers they use. So we test with two, the one I mentioned, JAWS, another one, NVDA, another acronym, non-visual desktop access. Those two alone are, I think, 80% or more of all screen readers. So we test with both and we make sure we're testing slightly older versions and the newer version. And like, and again, based on this research, it says, okay, you know, JAWS users tend to use Chrome, for example. So that's how we test. Or maybe NVDA users tend to use Firefox. So that's how we test. Because assistive technology evolves. And I'd love to eventually do things like have somebody on staff who is fully blind who uses a Braille display. I'd love to test with that. Or somebody who has to use a mouth stick or uses a heads-up display. We'll get there, but, you know, baby steps.
How can planners take advantage of these tools to ensure that they are using the most accessible technology available?
The planners, it's not really up to them. They need to make sure that they pick software that works with the assistive technology that their users use.
Okay.
So there really isn't a planner, I have to have JAWS installed. That's not really the case. It's the user, and they have their technology, their assistive technology or AT. They know what AT works for them. They use it all the time. So the planners just need to make sure that they pick software that works. Here is a shameless plug, like Cvent. So W3 that creates those WCAG guidelines, they have a checklist for events. And number one is pick accessible software. So that's my job. My job is to make sure our software works with those screen readers and Braille displays and voice inputs and all those kind of things. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, kind of taking a step back from the technology, I guess, angle and looking at accessibility in a broader light, how can planners and even hotels and venues like convention centers keep accessibility top of mind as more and more in-person gatherings are taking place?
Remember that not everybody's like you. I think that's a big thing. Their eyes might not work like yours. And I don't mean just not working at all. I mean, they could be colorblind or CVD, color vision deficient. By the way, 8% of men have some degree of color vision deficiency. That's a
Oh,
huge
wow.
number. And so I gave training once where I had badges where I showed, like, I think it was a purple, green, and a yellow or whatever, let's say. And that was your breakout group. For somebody who's colorblind, they can't really tell the difference. And I showed them in if they had full colorblind, what it is. So you can still do colors, but have the word purple, have the word green, have just make it easy like that. I think that's a good start. But also things like your reception, your cocktail tables, breaking away from software, you have this beautiful reception hall. Everybody's going to come and have a drink and have some crab cakes and hang out. And the tables are this height. I'm using my hands, sorry, but the tables are a foot above the head of somebody in a wheelchair. So that's okay if you want to have, some of the tables like that, but have some that are adjustable or have some that are lower. And also on those tables, don't have these beautiful, again, I apologize, I'm using my hands, don't have these beautiful long tablecloths that flow and go a foot into the onto the floor, because somebody in that wheelchair is going to roll up, their front wheel's going to hit it, they're going to pull it on top of them.
Or they'll have a
So,
blanket over their lap, right?
and then they're wearing a wet blanket on their lap because they spilled all their drinks. Exactly it. So just think about everybody who does not have the same abilities that you do. I think that's a really, really good start.
An interesting conversation I recently had too is imagine how you would feel if all of your friends or colleagues are walking in this elaborate main entrance of an event, and they're walking in, and maybe there's like a fog machine that's creating an atmosphere and all of these fun lights and decorations, but you're in a wheelchair and there are stairs leading to the main entrance.
Yeah.
And you have to go through the back of it and you miss all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So even considering, like accessible entrances and things like that and renovations, everyone's making renovations right now. But that kind of goes into my next question, which is what are some areas of accessibility that tend to be overlooked or forgotten about, or just harder for people to consider and realize if they're not in that person's shoes?
Yeah, I won't say you mentioned kind of forgotten about. I don't think it's necessarily that, but I think I want planners to be better about asking probing specific questions. So we're very good. I'm lactose intolerant. Okay. If I go to an event, you almost guarantee if it's going to serve food, they're going to have, tell dietary restrictions, and one of them is going to be lactose intolerant. Look. If I don't get a piece of cheesecake, it's not going to break. Well, it will break my heart because I love cheesecake, but it's not going to ruin my event. But if somebody who's going to that event is deaf and needs a sign language interpreter, and you don't ask, will you require a sign language interpreter in that registration, you've ruined the event for that person. So I don't know if it's necessarily like things that people forget. We just don't know or don't think about asking those questions. And that's I would love to see this is if industry-wide, ask those questions. And I'm going to talk about a second about a perfect, like this circle of life kind of thing. Okay. A lot of people say, I don't need to ask those questions because I don't have attendees with disabilities. Maybe we don't have attendees with disabilities because they're not enabled to come to your event. So if we start making those accommodations, in some cases insanely minor, so people with disabilities can go to your event, they start going to the event more, you learn, like, oh my God, I just had in an event of 1,000 people, I just had 10 people in wheelchairs, I had 15 people who were blind, I had 20 people who were deaf. The next time you'll ask more questions, and then maybe more people will come. So it's that kind of a circle of life or whatever, the perfect circle, you know what I'm trying to say. But it might be, and again, I'm not saying it's wrong. We never asked the questions because people weren't attending events, but I like to flip it and say they were not attending the events because we weren't asking the right questions on how to enable them to come to our event.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a way that I haven't necessarily looked at it either, but you're so right. And that if you don't ask the question, they already feel like they're not included. They already feel like they're not being considered. And that wouldn't make me want to attend, right?
Yeah.
They, you're not even asking or questioning what I may need. And obviously that shows that you don't care enough to put the time and effort into it. And that might not be true, but you know, that might be how they feel, like, oh, they're not considering me. And therefore I am not going to fill out this registration and attend this event because, you know, they didn't think to consider other types of abilities. What I guess are some ways that the industry can educate themselves and be more aware and in tune with these things?
I think talk to people with disabilities, ask those specific questions, ask probing questions. I think people are afraid to ask. You know, we seem to be good about, do you require an accommodation? And we can't say like, are you blind? Are you deaf? You know, I know there are legal requirements, but you can say, will you require a sign language interpreter? Do you require captions? Will you be accompanied by a service animal? And just ask those questions and get specific, because you learn more pain points, you're going to enable more people, and your events are going to be more successful. So part of this is just self-serving. I mentioned 26% of adults with a disability. If I go to any planner out there and say, 26% of your possible attendees will not come unless you do these things, they'll like, what do I need to do? They'll jump at the chance.
Mm-hmm.
But right now they just don't know it.
Yeah. It puts it into perspective for them. So the scope of accessibility too is broadening and looking beyond physical disabilities and considering things like neurodiversity and mental disabilities as well. Have you experienced the shift in prioritizing accessibility in this way at meetings and events?
Yeah, and I think this partly borders on usability and user research and good UX, and part of it is specific to people with disabilities. Let's say there's a registration site and it's awful, and I'm lucky that I don't have anxiety, right? I go to a site that's awful. I can feel the hair on the back of my neck. I hate this site. It makes me angry, but I'll fight my way through it. I'll make it, I'll register. I'll be angry, but I'll get over it, right? But somebody with anxiety or ADHD or something, that some neurodiversity issue, they hit that site and they bolt, they're gone. So I think that's an important distinction with things like neurodiversity, mental health issues. They'll get triggered and they leave and then they're not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So to go back to that percentage, the 20% of people in the US with a disability, we've now forced someone to leave our site and not register for our event. We've lost a client. We've lost somebody who in some cases might have been a speaker, might have been a, you know, our keynote, somebody who was vital to this event, somebody who was really going to share their knowledge. And because of a poorly designed website or bad software, we just drove them away and they're not coming back.
Mm-hmm. All it takes is one bad experience, right?
One bad experience, and they're never going back to your conference. And the disability community, we talk. So we might let them know, like, wow, never go to XYZ conference because I had such an awful experience on their website that I can't imagine how awful that conference is. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have
and
to
we don't want, nobody wants that.
Yeah, advocate and make others aware. And like you said, no matter what community you're a part of, you talk and you share that information. So
yeah.
That's another thing to consider for sure. What would you say are the industry's greatest strengths and weaknesses when it comes to accessibility right now?
I think the strength, as I mentioned earlier, they want to throw a good party. They want to be welcoming. You don't go into this industry unless you really want to help people and bring people in. Nobody goes into like a, you know, hotel and restaurant management major and says, I don't care about people.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't happen. We want to be welcoming. We want to bring people in, and that's the greatest strength. And when you point out through things like this, you point out how you can help people and they jump at the chance. That's by far the greatest strength. I think the biggest weakness is kind of that, there's a certain term for it, but it's that paralysis of, I don't know what to do, and I'm so busy that I'm not going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that has to be on like the software. We have to make it super, super easy on them. And part of it is they just can't do that. They just mm-hmm. have to say, you know what? And And again, like I mentioned, maybe they just don't know that to ask, you know, hey, you do any of your, or they don't know to ask, sorry, if any of their attendees require like sign language interpreting, right? Mm-hmm. So part of that is they just don't know, but I want to make sure that they know it and they do it, and it's not, I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to punt and I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah.
But so, it's not just event planners, and it's everybody does that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's why Global Accessibility Awareness Day is a thing, right? Because everyone can benefit.
That's exactly it. We're trying to drive awareness. Yeah. Yeah.
So kind of to wrap our conversation up today, what is, I guess, the greatest piece of advice or one important piece of advice that you would give our listeners today and in the industry and just in general when it comes to being an advocate and being someone who is aware of and supporting accessibility initiatives?
I think kind of spread the word. Now we, if you've listened to this or if you've read this, you've heard these conversations, you understand the numbers, and you understand, like, you know, I'm assuming if somebody in the hotel industry, event planner, they want to be welcoming of their guests. They want people to be included. Now you know that that includes people with disabilities, and act on it. It may be something huge. It may be something really minor. That's up to, you know, up for them to decide, but it has to be something. Just kind of make the step. So the next time you do a registration site, ask more questions, or even ask any question, do you require accommodation? It might be something as simple as that. And then a comment field so they can put it in, you know, I require sign language interpreter, but, or ask 15 questions like you do with dietary. Mm-hmm. Ask them, will you be accompanied by a personal care assistant? Will you be accompanied by a service animal? You know, do you need a sign language interpreter? Do you require captions? There are so many questions that they could ask. And the more questions you ask, I don't know about you, but the more they ask, the more they probe, the more I feel comfortable giving them more information. Mm-hmm. Somebody says, do you have a disability? It's none of your business.
Yeah.
But do you require sign language interpreting to attend this awesome event? Oh, actually, I do. Mm-hmm. And then everything gets better from there.
Yeah. I think that there is a little bit of a fear in asking questions like that, but in reality, that's the way to learn. And people who are being asked those questions are appreciative of knowing that you are putting the effort into getting to know and understand their situation better. So
100%. Yeah.
Well, Stephen, those were all of my questions for you today, but did you have anything that you wanted to add or talk about before we wrap this up?
No, just please ask those questions. And I get very excited. I've worked a lot with conferences for people with disabilities. This is a technology conferences, things like that. And they always do it right. Mm-hmm. Besides the in-person stuff, man, I could do a whole interview like this on the in-person stuff they do that is so cool. Mm-hmm. But start assuming, know that people with disabilities 100% will attend your event. Start from that, and then where do you go from there is I think is the right thing we all want to do.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for joining us. Your insight is incredibly helpful and something I think that a lot of people need to hear and will benefit from hearing. So I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's fun mm-hmm. spreading the word.
Yeah. That was Stephen Cutchin, Senior Product Manager of Accessibility at Cvent. Thank you for joining us for this Meetings Today podcast. I'm Taylor Smith, Destinations and Features Content Developer for Meetings Today. And if you're interested in listening to any more of our podcasts highlighting different trends in the meetings and events industry, check out our website at meetingstoday.com. And thank you again for listening.